As we know, this coming Friday we are going to commemorate Asarah B'Teves, which, by the way, is a very unusual thing that we have a fast day on Friday, which gives us a lot to talk about. And we're just going to go through this morning some of the very pertinent halachos that come up on every public fast day, and in particular, some of the things we are going to confront this week with Asarah B'Teves being on Erev Shabbos. Let us just back up a little bit and try to understand what the public fast days are all about. After the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so last week we had a little bit of a history lesson about the Bayis Sheni, about the second Beis HaMikdash. This week we are going to continue a little bit on that theme, but basically what happened was, after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was a concern that while the Jews would spend time in Galus, while the Jews would spend time in exile, they would forget about the experience of Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash. And that was a grave concern. And to make sure that everybody would remember that our ultimate goal is to get back to Yerushalayim, to get back to a Beis HaMikdash, the Nevi'im, the prophets who lived at that time, decided that they should have public days of commemoration for all that was lost with the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So they made four public fast days. It was Tisha B'Av, Asarah B'Teves, Tzom Gedalia, and Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Those were the four fast days. And if you look in Shulchan Aruch, you will see in number Aleph, the first entry here on the source sheet, Chayavim Lehisanos B'Tisha B'Av, B'Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, B'Gimel B'Tishrei, U'B'Yud B'Teves, Mipnei Dvarim Harayim She'uru Bahem. We have an obligation to fast on these four designated calendaric days because of the terrible things that took place on those days. Writes the Mishnah Brura, what happened on Asarah B'Teves? So he explains, Asarah B'Teves Shebo Samach Melech Bavel Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha Al Yerushalayim. Asarah B'Teves was the day on which Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Bavel, decided to lay siege on Yerushalayim, Vehevia B'Matzor Uva Matzok, and as a result of that siege, obviously there was no commerce, and there was no food, and it was just a terrible time for the Jewish people. Umizeh Nimshach HaChurban. It basically took 2.5 years from when they laid the siege, but then that really led and precipitated the entire experience of Churban Beis HaMikdash. There's an amazing comment of Rab Elia Lapyan, who was one of the great mashgichim of the last generation, where he writes, commenting on a pasuk in Sefer Koheles, if you look at number Beis, the pasuk says, Ki lo yeda ha'adam es ito. A person never knows their time. And we know that to be true. One never knows their time. But then the pasuk ends off, Kidagim shene'echazim b'mitsuda ra'a. Like fish that are caught in a net. So what does that mean? So on face value it means, the simple level, is that a fish doesn't realize that it's about to lose its life because it doesn't see that it's caught in the net. So too, we never know, human beings in this world really can never know with certainty when our time will come. We live life, we try to be healthy, we try to take precautions, we try to do whatever we can. But unfortunately, one really never knows when that time will be. But Rabbi Elia Lapyan says it means something far greater, and that is that sometimes we involve ourselves in different activities. And we think, you know, like the fish, he says, the fish thinks that the end of its life is when it's pulled out of the water, but it doesn't realize that the end really happened a long time ago when it was caught out in the sea by the net. That's when everything was already determined. That's when its fate was already decided. This is just a result. This is just an outcome of that activity that happened a long time ago. And therefore, says Rabbi Elia Lapyan, that's exactly what happened here by the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Nebuchadnezzar laid siege on Yerushalayim, and he brought the Jewish people in Yerushalayim to a very difficult set of circumstances. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they felt, look what happened, look how much destruction has been caused to our people. But they didn't realize that this was already something that happened a very long time ago. So that was the concern, that when Nebuchadnezzar decided to lay the siege, that really is what brought about the whole destruction. But the destruction really happened many, many years before. And that is something that's important for us to think about on Asarah B'Teves. I'm sorry to those who are online that I was muted for the first 10 minutes of the shiur. But now we're back. And I thank whoever it was that just waved their hands at me to bring it to my attention. Thank you. Always a pleasure to have you. Okay, so now, let us continue on with the shir. The psukim say in the Navi Malachim, as well as the Navi Yirmiyah, the psukim tell us that what happened at the time was, what brought about the siege, why did Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, decide that he wanted to lay siege on Yerushalayim? The Navi tells us the reason why is because Nebuchadnezzar, when he came to power, put Melech Tzidkiyahu, right? You ever heard about Tzidkiyahu, if you've ever traveled in Yerushalayim or gone around many of the archaeological digs that we have in Eretz Yisrael, I'm sure you've heard about Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. And Tzidkiyahu was one that was appointed by Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. When he was appointed, Nebuchadnezzar said, I will make you promise that you will never rebel against me, that you will never cause an uprising against my monarchy, against my kingship. And in the end, that's exactly what he did. Tzidkiyahu did rebel, and he turned his back on Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar said, you violated the agreement that we had, you violated the promise, and therefore he turned around and he decided to lay siege on Yerushalayim, ultimately destroying the Beis HaMikdash. But it's always important to look at life not only as what we see to be the obvious, but also to think a little bit deeper, to go one step deeper in life and think about what lays behind it. And that's important in this instance as well, where when you look at the very simple, obvious facts, you'll notice that Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim, and the reason for that was a direct result of the fact that Tzidkiyahu HaMelech had run a rebellion against him. However, the Pasuk says in Sefer Melachim that it was not only that. The Pasuk says, Ki al af Hashem haisa b'Yerushalayim u'b'Yehuda. The af, the anger, the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so high, was so elevated at that time, he was so disappointed with the Jewish people. And as a result, explains the Malbim, as a result, God put in the mind of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech that he should rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar then reacted, he responded and came to destroy Yerushalayim. But the real reason for all of this was because God was so angry at the Jewish people for their behavior at that time. So that's important for us always to keep in mind. As the Malbim writes here, it's important for us always to think about, there are things that we see as being the obvious catalyst, the obvious reason for why something may or may not have happened to us in life. But to think a step beyond that, which sometimes is difficult for us to really recreate what that step behind might be, but to think about what might stand behind it, as what happened here, that the real reason for the Churban Beis HaMikdash was not because of a siege, it was not because of Nebuchadnezzar, it was because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was strongly disappointed with the Jews of that generation. As things went, after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Jewish people were in Galus, were in exile for 70 years. They remained there for only 70 years. They were promised in advance they would only be there for 70 years. After 70 years were up, Ezra and Nehemiah, who were the last of the Nevi'im, told the Jewish community that it's time to go back. Let's do a Shivas Tzion movement. They were very unsuccessful in getting the Jews to come back. There was a very small number of Jewish people who answered that call. But over time, people came back and they rebuilt a Beis HaMikdash. And that was the period of the Bayis Sheni. And now comes the first Tisha B'Av, when they had a second Beis HaMikdash, and everyone is stunned. What do we do now? For the last 70 years that we were living in exile, we were all observing four public days of commemoration to mourn the loss of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we have a Beis HaMikdash. So why should we commemorate a loss when we no longer have that loss? Now everything's great. But how can we just get rid of a common practice that we've been following for 70 years? So this was something that was a major tension in the times of the Bayis Sheni. What do we do with Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av and Asar B'Teves and Tzom Gedalia? How are we supposed to observe them? Should we observe them? Or should we just ignore them? They finally sent the question to Zechariah HaNavi. Zechariah was one of the great prophets who lived at that time. And Zechariah responded to the call, if you look at number Gimel, and he said, Ko amar Hashem Tzavakos, I asked this question to the Ribono Shel Olam himself, and I said, does it make sense that we should continue to have a public day of fasting when we now have a second Beis HaMikdash that's functioning, that's alive and operational, when Jews are back in Yerushalayim? Why should we now continue to observe days of fasting? And Zechariah HaNavi said, after discussing this with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam himself decided that this is what should be done. Tzom HaRavi, V'Tzom HaChamishi, V'Tzom HaShvi, V'Tzom HaAsiri, Yihyeh lebeis Yehuda lesason ulesimcha ulemoadim tovim. The pasuk says in the Navi Zechariah that we are no longer going to observe these days of public mourning, because after all, we live at a very happy time. Now we have a Beis HaMikdash. Why would we observe a day of fasting, a day of mourning, if things really seem to be very positive for the Jewish people right now? And therefore, in the times of the Bayis Sheni, there was no Tisha B'Av, there was no Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and there was no day of communal mourning, because after all, they once again had a Beis HaMikdash. So that's a historical point to be aware of. But then, the Rambam picks up on that, and he says, and what will be in our times, when we have a Bayis Shlishi, what's going to happen then? We've been suffering 2,000 years, we've been commemorating all of these losses, and the Rambam says, Kol Hatzomos Ha'elu. The Rambam writes, all of these days of public mourning, Asidim Libatel Limos HaMashiach, they will all be discontinued, they will all be abolished in the days of Mashiach, because we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam says, not only would they be abolished, the Rambam says, Hey Masidim Lias Yamim Tovim V'Yimei Sasam V'Simcha. Tisha B'Av is going to be a day of great celebration. We will remember the fact that Tisha B'Av, we used to sit on the floor, and we used to fast, and we used to have many different expressions of sorrow and of mourning. And we will be reminded that now we live in such a joyous and festive time. And the Rambam says, that's what we pray for, that's what we look forward to. And that is Amir Tzah Hashem, the experience that we will have when the Bayis Shlishi will be rebuilt. So let us now get into some of the important halachos. When we have a day of public mourning, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, Asar B'Teves, let's focus on Asar B'Teves now, because that's what we have this coming Friday. So we have to follow the rule of what the Gemara says in Maseches Tainus Daf Yud Beis. And the Gemara there says, how long must a fast continue? How long does somebody need to carry on that fast day? So we start in the morning. Obviously, Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur start at night, but Asar B'Teves starts only in the morning. And the Gemara says, Kol Tainus Shalosh Shaka Alav Hachama Eino Tainus. The Gemara says, if you don't continue on with the fasting until the sun has set, that's not called a fast day. So you can't, you know, sometimes you say, I'll fast a half a day. Fasting a half a day, the Gemara says, is not legitimate. You have to fast until the sun sets. Now, when does the sun set? So there's something called Shkias HaChama, when the sun is no longer seen on the horizon. And then we have something later that's called Seis HaKochavim, which means not only when the sun is no longer seen on the horizon, that is when the stars have already appeared, because it's much darker outside. So we believe that fast days need to continue on until Seis HaKochavim, which means until, not until the sun sets, but until later on, which is once the stars come out. Now, let's think about this week, when Asar B'Teves very unusually falls out on Erev Shabbos. And that's a very unusual circumstance. My son looked it up for me the other night, and he told me that 2013 was the last time it happened, and it's going to happen another 10 times in the next 50 years. He's a calendar guy. I don't know anything about this stuff, but something like that. So Asar B'Teves every so often falls out on Erev Shabbos. And the problem now becomes, when does the fast end when you have Asar B'Teves on Erev Shabbos? Well, if we follow the regular rules, the general rule is that you have to fast until the stars come out. But when we have Erev Shabbos, we have another consideration that we need to think about, and that is based on the following. The Yerushalmi tells us a story. The Gemara in the Yerushalmi tells us about Rab Avin, who was a very righteous, a very devout individual, and every Erev Shabbos, he would fast. He never ate on Friday. Why? Because he wanted to build up an appetite. He wanted to build up a craving to be able to eat the Shabbos meal with a lot of excitement. So if he didn't eat the whole day, then he would be excited to eat on Friday night. The Shulchan Aruch says that for many generations, there were chassidim va'anshe maisa. There were some very righteous people who carried on this practice and who used to fast on Erev Shabbos. And this way, when they came into the meal on Friday night, they were very excited to eat. And that enhanced their expression of Oneg Shabbos. But the Magen Avram says that we do not do this. Why? Because for most people who are regular people, and I consider myself a regular person, for most regular people, the assumption is if you don't eat all day, you'll probably be in some kind of bad mood, and you're not really going to be very happy, and you're going to be snappy at people, and just you're not going to be yourself. It's just the way it is. And therefore, if you're going to come into Shabbos when you're in that kind of mood, that doesn't add to your Oneg Shabbos, it takes away from your Oneg Shabbos. And therefore the Magen Avraham says that in general terms, in a general circumstance, unless you're one of these really great, righteous, pious individuals who knows how to contain themselves and who knows how to behave well, even when they're really hungry or really thirsty, says the Magen Avraham, for most average people, fasting on Erev Shabbos is not a good idea, because we're going to come into Shabbos kishehu me'una. I'm going to be afflicted when I come into Shabbos, and that's not going to be a good Shabbos experience. Now, here's a fascinating story the Gemara tells, which is a very unusual story, because basically the whole thing is based on a mistaken premise. Sometimes we watch somebody do something, and we don't fully understand what it's all about. So they say the apocryphal story about Rav Moshe Feinstein, I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently he was once at a bris, and he picked up a bottle of milk. He was making a coffee, and he picked it up, and he then put it back down, and he went to the next table, picked up a bottle of milk, and he poured it into his coffee. Somebody came over to him after and said, oh, you see, Rav Moshe doesn't like the hechsher on this milk, and that's why he went to the other table. And he said, no, the bottle of milk was empty, so I just had to go get another one from the other table. I remember, as a child, there were a lot of young boys in YU who used to eat in our house every Shabbos, Friday night, Shabbos day. And they would all sit at the table, and they were in awe of my father, and they were scared to talk to him. But my father's like a big teddy bear. He's the nicest person, so he's very easy to talk to. But they didn't know that. So they used to come there, and they would say, Rebbe this and Rebbe that, and whatever. It always bothered my father that, like, why are they talking to me like this? Just talk to me. So I remember once a boy came over, and he said, when my father likes to drink orange juice. So we always had a pitcher of orange juice on the table. So he would take the pitcher, and when he was finished pouring, he would pick his cup up and tip it against the pitcher so that the last drop doesn't go onto the tablecloth, right? Makes sense. Not so crazy. So there's this boy who ate over all the time, and he once mustered up the courage to ask my father. He says, you know, Rebbe, I notice that when the Rebbe picks up the Rebbe's pitcher and he pours the Rebbe's orange juice into the Rebbe's cup, and then he takes the Rebbe's cup and he tips it against the Rebbe's orange, like none of us could follow the story anymore. And basically, he was asking, like, what's the big inyan? What's the big idea behind tipping your cup against the pitcher? My father said, I just don't want to ruin my wife's tablecloth. That's about it. So sometimes you see something and you don't fully understand what's behind it. Sometimes it's something silly like that, and sometimes it's something more significant. So this is one of those stories. The Gemara says in Maseches Erevin, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda was one of the great Tanoim. And the Gemara says in Maseches Erevin Daf Mem Aleph, such an unusual story that Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, I was a very close student of Rabbi Akiva, and therefore I watched him in all kinds of different circumstances, and I was always with him, and I learned a lot from those experiences. And he tells the story, Pamachas Hayunu Yoshim Lifnei Rabbi Akiva. I was one of the close students, and we were in Rabbi Akiva's house, and we were all sitting around together. V'tisha B'av Shechal B'Erev Shabbos Haya. Happened to be, it was a Tisha B'av that fell out on Friday afternoon. Vehevielo beitza megugeles. You're not going to believe it. He says they brought Rabbi Akiva a egg, vegama, and he ate it on Friday afternoon. Lo shahaya ta'evla. It's not that Rabbi Akiva was passing out and he was fainting, and that's why he ate it. Elo kedei laharos halacha letalmidim. He wanted to teach all of us a lesson that kilei shelo yikanis l'shabbos kishehu meuneh. He wanted to teach us that even when Tisha B'Av falls out on a Friday, you don't extend the fast into Shabbos, because we don't want you to come into Shabbos with a bad mood. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva on Friday afternoon, after fasting some of the day, on Friday afternoon when they brought him an egg, he ate it. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, I formulated my opinion based on that story that I watched Rabbi Akiva eat on Friday afternoon of Tisha B'Av. And I think that's the halacha anytime you have a fast day on Erev Shabbos, that you should eat in the middle of the afternoon so that you don't come into Shabbos being in a bad mood. That's what Rabbi Yehuda's opinion was. And Rabbi Yossi says, I don't know what you're talking about. The halacha is, whenever you have a public fast day, you need to extend the fast until nightfall, until the stars come out, till Tzeis HaKochavim. So that story doesn't make any sense. The halacha is, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi. We paskin like Rabbi Yossi that when you have a public fast day, even if it's on a Friday, you have to fast until Tzeis HaKochavim. So I know it's unusual and I know it's strange, but that's what we're going to do this week. So what happened with that story? Well, Tosus there comments in the name of Rabbeinu Hananel that what happened was Rabbi Yehuda misunderstood the whole thing. That was the year that Rabbi Akiva was a chola mesukan. Rabbi Akiva had an underlying illness. He was really sick. He was giving shiur anyway because I guess he was able to give shiur even when he was sick. But the doctors told him he absolutely was not allowed to fast that year. And therefore, on Friday afternoon of Tisha B'Av, he had to eat because he was a cholet. The same way anyone who's sick has to eat on Tisha B'Av. And therefore, he says, Rabbi Yehuda totally misunderstood the whole story. He didn't get all the details. And Rabbi Yehuda, because of that mistaken detail, made a mistaken psak. And he is not correct, and that's why we don't accept his opinion. So I find that to be a fascinating story that the Gemara quotes. And it's fascinating that as a result of not knowing all the facts, he actually made a slight mistake. But in the end of the day, we don't paskin like that. We don't accept that opinion. And we hold that you have to fast until Seis HaKol Chavin. So that's what we're going to do this week. Before every public fast day, the question is raised, what about children who are before bar or bas mitzvah? Must they participate in a fast or not? So we know there's a halacha of chinuch. We know that we're supposed to educate our children to observe all kinds of mitzvahs. And the Gemara says in Masechta Sukkah, it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, when a child knows how to learn Torah, we teach them Aleph Beis. And when a child knows how to daven, we teach them Kriya Shema. And when a child knows how to put on tefillin, we buy the child a pair of tefillin. And when all these different things, when a child knows how to keep Shabbos, we teach them how to keep Shabbos and all the different mitzvahs that are involved in our activity as adults, we have to encourage our children to get used to doing them before it really counts. That's what the mitzvah of chinuch is all about. In order that, when they become adults, and it's going to actually matter that they observe the mitzvahs, it won't be new to them. It's going to be something that they're already used to. And therefore the Gemara says, we have this mitzvah, we have this idea of chinuch. So that goes for many, many mitzvahs. Every so often, unfortunately, we have a very painful situation, and that is when a young child loses a parent. It's a very terrible, tragic situation when that happens. But what is the halacha? Does that child have to sit shiva? Does that child have to observe avelus? So if you're talking about a two-year-old, they don't even understand anything. But let's say you have a 10-year-old who does understand what happened and who does appreciate the fact that there's tremendous loss in the family. Would that child be obligated to observe all the laws of Shiva and Shloshim and Yud Beis Chodesh or not? So the Gemara has an interesting comment. And that comment is, in the Gemara, we know that when somebody passes away, the immediate relatives have to rip Kriya. They don't just sit Shiva, they also rip Kriya. What happens when a child loses a parent, a young child? So the Gemara says, we rip Kriya on the child as well, Mipnei Agmas Nefesh. What does that mean? Agmas Nefesh means because it's painful. So we rip Kriya on the child because this is a painful situation. I don't know if you've ever been to one of these kinds of levayas. You should never have to be. But it's very painful to watch when a young child has to rip Kriya for a parent. And you'll notice, if you're ever in such a situation or a circumstance, many people somehow hold it together during the levaya. When they get up to that part of ripping Kriya for the young child, you hear sobbing. You hear the room. People really take to that. And the Gemara says, that is why we rip Kriya on a young child. Mipnei Agmas Nefesh. That people should appreciate the loss. That this child is now a yasom. That the child doesn't have a parent to take care of them. And Rashi says, you see from there, that the Gemara should have said, the reason why we rip Kriya on a child is because the child has an obligation to observe all the laws of Avelus. The same way they have to keep Shabbos when they're children, because we want to be mechanech them, so too we should treat them the same when it comes to the laws of Avelus. We should educate them how one observes the laws of Avelus. And Rashi says, you see from the Gemara that obviously that is not the case. You see from the Gemara that the only reason why we make a child rip Kriya is because of Agmas Nefesh, because we want people to feel the sense of mourning, the sense of pain, and the sense of loss that this family is going through. And from there, there's an instructive comment of the Ramami Panu, which is quoted in the Magen Avram, that there is no concept of chinuch when it comes to avelus. A child doesn't have to sit shiva, a child doesn't have to do any of these things, and that is because we don't assume that there's a mitzvah of chinuch when it comes to avelus. Many explain the reason why is because we train a child to keep Shabbos because we hope that when they are 12, 13 years old, they will have the opportunity to observe Shabbos. We want them to know how to do it. We train a child to wear tefillin because when they become of age, they should be able to observe the mitzvah, just like all mitzvahs. We don't train a child how to observe the laws of Avelos because we don't anticipate that a child will have to do that when they become an adult. It's not something that we want to train children to do. And therefore, the accepted practice is that children really do not have to observe the laws of Avelos because chinuch doesn't really apply to that mitzvah. It's not something that we hope the child will ever have to do when they become an adult. So therefore, when it comes to public days of fasting, like Tisha B'Av, Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, Asar B'Teves, and Som Gedalia, the general understanding is that children do not have to participate because we hope that when they become of age, we will no longer be observing these public days of mourning. We will then be celebrating on these days with a Beis HaMikdash. Now, this should not be confused with Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is not a day of fasting that is based on Avelos. Yom Kippur is a day of fasting that is based on atonement, on tshuva. And therefore, when it comes to Yom Kippur, there is a major discussion at what age children should already start observing some aspect of Yom Kippur, maybe fasting part of the day, maybe extending a little bit, obviously not to endanger any children. But that's something that is discussed particularly by Yom Kippur. That's because Yom Kippur is not in line with all these other fast days that we are describing that are in commemoration of Avelos and Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Ramah has an interesting comment that I'm sure none of us have ever thought of. And that is, am I allowed to touch food on a public fast day? So you're probably looking like that's a very strange question to even ask. We all know that on a public fast day we prepare dinner, we prepare breakfast, we all are handling food all day and giving food to our children and doing whatever has to be done. So what kind of discussion is this? So it's actually a very interesting one. The Ramah can be found in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim. If you look at number Vav, the Ramah tells us that you're allowed to touch food on Yom Kippur, and you were allowed to feed your children on Yom Kippur. V'lo chai shinan, and we're not concerned that maybe while I'm handling the food, I might come to take a bite or I might eat it. That's what the Ramah says. Now the Ramah does not explain why are we not concerned about that. Very often when I'm walking around the kitchen, I'm putting something away, you know, sometimes people just happen to put something in their mouth. So why is it that when it comes to Yom Kippur, why should I not be concerned that maybe by touching, by handling the food or the drinks in my house, I will come to eat or drink on Yom HaKippurim? And there are two suggestions given by the Magen Avraham and the Taz. One reason that's given is because, and I'm sorry, the Magen Avraham asks, how come on Pesach you're not allowed to handle chametz because we're assuming maybe you're going to eat it? If you're going to start moving around with chametz and putting it away, then maybe you'll come to eat it, and therefore you cannot handle chametz at all. When it comes to Yom Kippur, why don't we have the same concern? So that's a very good question. So there are two answers given. Answer number one is, Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur. No one's going to make a mistake on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, everybody knows, it's a very holy day, it's a very important day. Nobody's going to make a mistake. Pesach, nah, not so. Interesting. But that's answer number one. Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur, and therefore it's in a category of its own. The second answer is that on Pesach, Pesach is the exception. The reason why on Pesach you're not allowed to is because on Pesach you're allowed to eat everything else in the house. So you're used to walking around the house with your matzah crackers, and you're used to walking around the house with your, I don't know if they make macaroons anymore. I never was able to eat them, but whatever. There are some people who like them, I guess. They still make them. And you're walking around with all the candy and all the things, and now you happen to come across a piece of chametz, and as you're putting it away, you say, oh, I'm eating anyway, I'm eating other things, maybe you'll come to eat that also. And that's why on Pesach we say you cannot handle chametz at all, because maybe you will confuse this snack with a different snack that you were eating. However, when it comes to Yom Kippur, you're not eating anything. And you know that you're starving, and you know that you're hungry, and therefore you're not going to make a mistake and come to eat something because you know that food has been off limits the entirety of the day. What is the nafkamina? What is the difference between these two answers? For anyone who's following, the difference would be Shiva Asar B'Tamuz or Asar B'Teves. Am I allowed to handle food on any of the other public fast days? If you say the reason why I'm allowed to handle food on Yom Kippur is because Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur, and nobody would make a mistake on Yom Kippur, then that is a specific allowance for Yom Kippur only that would not translate, that would not carry over to Asar B'Teves. However, if you say that the exception to the rule is Pesach, that you're always allowed to carry food, you're always allowed to handle food on a public fast day because I'm fasting, I'm not going to make a mistake, and Pesach is the only concern because on Pesach I'm eating so many other things and maybe I'll mistakenly come to eat this as well, then that would be something that would give us an allowance on Asar B'Teves. And that is the accepted opinion. We accept that opinion that you're allowed to handle food on any of the public fast days because we assume Pesach is the exception, And that is the only time where we have a major concern. Often on a Tainus Tzibur, often on a public fast day, people develop headaches and migraines and they feel the need to take a pill. Or even if somebody doesn't have a headache or a migraine, often there are people who take daily routine medications, birth control pill or all kinds of pills that people need to take. And for them to skip a day is something that is not recommended at all. And the question is, what do they do on a public fast day? It's a very complicated issue, but if I just want to make it very simple and present the position of all of the poskim that I follow. So again, this is a major issue. Some disagree. But the standard poskim who I generally would ask all of my questions to and consult with on a regular basis all feel that this is permissible. And the reason why is because the Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, look at number Zion. Shulchan Aruch says on Yom Kippur, as we know, you're not allowed to eat anything. However, what if a person has some kind of strange appetite and he decides to eat something that is not roi la'achila? So I take an inedible item and I decide to eat it. Okay, I take a piece of plastic and I chew it and I swallow it. So it's probably not healthy, it's not a smart idea, but is that considered a violation of Yom Kippur because something went down my throat? The answer is no. Or he says, Sha'achal achilas gasa, what if a person overindulges, you're guzzling food the whole Erev Yom Kippur, and then you put something into your mouth after you're stuffed, and he says, Ad shekatz b'mezono, I'm like vomiting because I have so much food in my system. Would that be a violation of Yom Kippur when I eat additional food after I have no room anymore to eat anything and I have no appetite, but I'm just knee-jerk reaction, I walk into the house and I take something else to eat? Says the Shulchan Aruch, that would not be a violation of Yom Kippur. It's not advisable, but it's not something that is problematic. And the same goes, writes the Shulchan Aruch, if I decide to go outside and I take a branch off of a tree, or I take a leaf off of a tree, and I decide to eat that. Again, that's not a normal thing to eat. That's shelo kederach achila, that is not roi la'achila. That would not be a problem. And the same goes when it comes to pills. Again, the Shulchan Aruch did not talk about pills because they didn't have pills in those days in the 1500s. However, when we're talking about pills in our time, that's the same. Many assume that would be the same as a piece of bark off of a tree or a leaf off of a tree. That's not something that's called an edible item. So of course, I'm able to eat it, but it's not something that is considered to be a food, and therefore that would not be problematic on the public fast days. That is the generally accepted opinion. Again, there are those who disagree, but the generally accepted opinion is that it is permissible. The question then becomes, what if I can't take down the pill without some water? So what do I do now? So that is a very important question to discuss. And for that, we look at the Shulchan Aruch in our Chaim Siman Reish Dalid, and that is a number Ches, where the Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Brachos, we know that before we eat or drink anything, we're supposed to make a bracha. Is that really the case? Before you eat or drink anything, you have to make a bracha. Do you know of any food or drink that you are allowed to eat or drink without making a bracha? What? Medication. So as we said, medication is not a food item, so that's why you don't make a bracha. But is there any item that is considered to be a food or a drink, by all standards, that you would not make a bracha on? It's a trivia question. If you want the answer, you could just look at number Ches. And there, the Shulchan Aruch says that, based on a Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Memhei, the Gemara tells us that yes, it's true, whenever you eat or drink anything, you're supposed to make a bracha. However, says the Gemara, Hashose Mayim Letzamo, if I drink water because I am thirsty, that's when you make a bracha of shehakol and bari nefashos. Aval im chanke umsa. That's why no one knew the answer. This is Aramaic words. If you are choking or you're gagging, there's some kind of obstruction in your throat, you're coughing, and therefore you need a drink of water, not because you're thirsty, but because you just need to get it down, whatever is stuck there, so you quickly grab a bottle of water and you drink. In such a case, says the Shulchan Aruch, you do not recite a bracha, not a shehakol and not a bari nefashos. Why? Because it's assumed that when you drink water for pleasure, you make a bracha. When you drink water because it's a necessity to get something out, so I don't make a shehakol. It's not as if I'm drinking. If I'm taking some other item, if it's soda or juice or coffee, so then we assume I'm always getting benefit from the fact that I'm drinking something that has a taste. But if it's just water, I'm not benefiting anything. I'm just getting this, whatever it is that's obstructing my throat, I'm now drinking it down. And in such a case, the Shulchan Aruch says, a bracha would not be recited. And based on that, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman both paskin that if somebody needs to take a pill on a public fast day, again, Yom Kippur might be different, we're very careful on Yom Kippur, but on any of the other public fast days, if somebody needs to take a pill, they are allowed to not only take the pill, but they are allowed to take it down with water. Because I'm not drinking the water because I find pleasure and enjoyment in drinking water. I'm taking a minimal amount of water just to get the pill down. And in such a case, that would not be a violation of the tainus. There are many people who reached out and asked, well, now that Asara B'Teves falls out on Erev Shabbos, I'm going to be cooking for Shabbos. And as is the practice by many master chefs, that as they're cooking, they taste some of the food that they are cooking. I don't know if anybody here is that masterful that they do such a thing. And it always nauseates me when I see people do it, so whatever it is. But there are such people who take a taste out of whatever it is that they are making. Maybe they believe that once they put the spoon back in, it, you know, all the bacteria is gone. I'm not sure exactly, but okay. So the question then becomes, am I allowed to do that as I am preparing for Shabbos this week and cooking all of my Shabbos food? May I taste some of the food or not? So the Shulchan Aruch says that this is a dispute between the Mechaber, between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which means it boils down to a machlokas between Ashkenazim and Svardim. Ashkenazim always follow the Ramah, Svardim always follow the Shulchan Aruch. So here the Shulchan Aruch says, if on a public fast day you're going to taste something and spit it out immediately, that would be okay. Obviously you're not allowed to swallow it. That would be eating on a fast day. But if you're going to spit it out right away, that would be okay. Now, if you weren't nauseous enough by somebody sticking a spoon into the soup and drinking it, but now you're going to watch them spit it back into the soup, whatever, I wouldn't eat by someone this week. However, the Ramah says, not a good idea. The Ramah says Ashkenazim should not do this ever, even if they spit it out. Why? Because the Ramah tells us that we have to be concerned that it's going to start that you take a little taste and you spit it out. And then the next time you're going to taste it and you're going to say, hey, this is not bad. And you're actually going to eat it. And therefore the Ramah says one thing is going to lead to another thing, and therefore we should just stay away from tasting anything on a public fast day. And that is the general custom. That is the accepted opinion, that we should not taste things on a public fast day. A very common question that comes up is, every morning when I wake up, I have a cup of coffee, and that's just my reaction. That's natural. It's something that I just do every day. So on the on Asara B'Teves, I wake up this Friday morning, and I go downstairs in my pajamas, and I'm not even thinking, and I just turn on the coffee maker, and I make myself a coffee, or whatever it is. Some people have things in the morning that's part of the routine. And this Friday might bring them to do the same thing as part of their routine. So what happens if I inadvertently, if I accidentally eat something, forgetting that it was a fast day, and then somebody comes downstairs and says, you know, today is Asara B'Teves, I'm not sure why you're having your coffee, but I already drank half of it. So what do I do now? So there's a common misconception, and that is, well, once I broke it, I broke it. I made a mistake, and that's fine. And the Shulchan Aruch says, that is wrong. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say somebody has, I'm glad I discussed it, so let's say somebody has eaten garlic. So we all know that if you eat garlic, your breath is not going to smell good. It's going to smell like garlic, which bothers a lot of people. So the Gemara says, Misha achal shum. If you eat garlic, how are you supposed to get rid of it? Now you're going into a business meeting and you have to talk to somebody and you know it's going to annoy them. So what do? You should go yochal shum acher. You should go and eat another garlic to get rid of the first one? That's not going to help. So that's the expression that the Shulchan Aruch uses in this case. It's a famous expression, but it's used here. Just because I made a mistake and I ate something on a public fast day that I should not have eaten doesn't mean I should go now and continue that mistake and continue to eat. I've broken my fast. That was not proper. It was not right. I made a mistake, and I have to be more mindful the next time around. However, that doesn't give me a license to now break the rest of the fast. Today is a day of public fasting, a day of public commemoration, and I have to now forget about what I did and move on with the rest of the day fasting as I am supposed to. The Mishnah Berurah even writes, maybe somebody who made a mistake on a public fast day and ate and then continued on the rest of the day fasting as they're supposed to, maybe they have to take upon themselves to fast an additional day later on in the week. So again, that's already extreme. But the point being, just because somebody eats on a public fast day by mistake does not give them a license to continue to eat for the rest of the day. A question that comes up every year is, what about somebody who just wants to eat before the Zman? So we know that sunrise these days is pretty late. So at some times when we have public fast days, to wake up early before the fast starts is really early. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. But to wake up now before the fast day starts, not so early. I don't know, what would it be? 6 o'clock in the morning? Maybe earlier, I'm not sure, but it's not so bad. So the question is, am I allowed to eat before the fast officially begins? So this is a very interesting question. And the answer basically is, the Gemara says in Maseches Tainis, that we have an assumption that a fast day is really supposed to begin at night. just like Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur begin at night. So all the fast days are supposed to begin at night. But that's a very difficult thing for us to do, to fast for 24 hours. And that's why on the minor fast days, Asar B'Teves, Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, and Som Gedalia, we only begin the fast in the morning. However, the Gemara assumes that once I go to sleep at night, I now am accepting upon myself the fast. And when I wake up after I sleep, the fast already begins. Even if I wake up in the middle of the night. So that's the assumption of the Gemara. However, the Shulchan Aruch says, if I make a stipulation in advance that when I wake up I plan to drink or eat something because it's going to be before the fast, that is acceptable. That would be acceptable. That's what the Rama says. That's not a bidiyevet. That's l'chatchila. You're allowed to, before you go to sleep, you say, look, I need my coffee in the morning, I need my drink of water in the morning before the fast starts. And you say to yourself that I have every intention to wake up at whatever time it is and have that cup of coffee or have that drink or have breakfast. That is something that is acceptable, provided that somebody make a t'nai, provided that somebody stipulate in advance that that is what they plan to do. Again, a lot more to talk about, but I see it's already 10:15 and I have an appointment very soon that I have to go to. So let me just close with one final discussion, and that is, we know that on a public fast day, for those who are fasting, we insert the paragraph of Anenu. And Anenu is a tefillah that is specific to a public fast day, and it's a beautiful tefillah, it's a very heartfelt tefillah. In the middle of that tefillah we say, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Tefen El Rishenu Va'al Taster Panecha Mimenu. Don't look at our iniquities, don't look at our evil. Va'al Taster Panecha Mimenu, and don't turn your face away from us. Rabbi Baruch Epstein writes in his beautiful sefer, the Baruch Sha'amar, that perhaps what we mean by this double terminology, by this double phrase, is that there are two different ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes the Jewish people. And the Torah describes it in two different locations. Once it says, Vani eten es panei ba'ishahu, God says, I'm so angry, I'm going to look at you. Sometimes you have a principal walks into the room, they don't need to do anything. All they do is they look at a student and it already terrifies them. When you're looking too closely at me, it makes me nervous. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes says, I'm so angry at a person, Ani eten es panei ba'ishahu, I'm going to put my eyes on that person and I'm going to really look carefully at everything they're doing. And that's very scary. That's a dangerous thing for us to have to accept. There are other times when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm so angry, I don't want to talk to you. V'histarti panai mehem. I'm going to turn my face away from you. You're not going to see me. And I'm going to hide from you. And that is going to be the terrifying punishment. That you live a life without the Ribono Shel Olam on your side. That he's not interested in what's going on. These are two different descriptions that we find in two different places in Chumash. And he says, that's what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu here. Number one, we say, Al Tefen El Rishenu. Don't look too carefully at all of our mistakes. Because we know that we won't withstand that challenge. We know that we will never be able to come out okay if HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts looking carefully and closely at everything that we do. On the other hand, we ask you also, Al Taster Panecha Mimenu. Don't turn your face away from us. Don't give us either of these punishments. Let's just live a life where we have a comfortable relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where we feel confident in the fact that He is looking after us, that He's taking care of us, that He's investing in us, that He's doing everything that's important for us to have, and that He's saving us from harm, but at the same time that He's not being too invested, not too carefully looking at everything that goes on. And that's what we ask a special bakasha on a public day of mourning, on a public day of fasting, that we have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is even keeled, that is not extreme in either direction, where the Ribono Shel Olam is not turning His face against us, but He's not turning His face too much to focus on us either. And the Rambam that we will end with is a very important Rambam for all of us to think about whenever we commemorate a day of Avelus. And that Rambam is in Hilchos Tainius Perakei, where he says, Yesh Sham Yamim Shekol Yisrael Mis'anim Bahem Mipnei Hatzara She'iru Bahem. There are a number of days that the entire Jewish people use to commemorate terrible things that happen. But what is the reason for these days of commemoration? Says the Rambam, the objective is, and it always bothers me when people say, how am I going to pass the day? A public day of mourning is not made to pass the day. Right? When somebody would sit Shiva, they don't turn to the people next to them and say, how can I pass the day? No, the point is that you should spend the day of Shiva with introspection, thinking about the loss, thinking about what happened, thinking about the great person that once was and what we can learn from them. That's what days of mourning are all about. And says the Rambam, our objective on days of mourning is not supposed to be, how do I best pass the day, and how many movies can I watch, and how many places can I run to distract myself. Being distracted is good if you're not feeling well. But it's important that we do focus on a day of a public fast day, on a day of mourning, to take the messages of what it is that we're supposed to get. And what are those messages? Says the Rambam, Kedei le'orer ha'levavos v'leftoach darkei hatshuva. So we all know on Yom Kippur, we take that experience very seriously, and it's something that we all appreciate, and we all understand the severity of Yom HaKippurim. But Yom Kippur is not enough. It's not enough to have one day a year. And therefore the Rambam says, these are opportunities for all of us to open our hearts a little bit, to slow down, and to just think, v'leftoach darkei hatshuva. It should be an opportunity for us to do a little bit of cheshbon nefesh, a little bit of self-introspection. Don't talk about the Jews who lived in the days of the Churban and say, oh, how evil they were, how many mistakes they made, how terrible they were. Says the Rambam, the mistakes that they made are mistakes that we are continuing to make. So we don't serve Avodah Zarah, we do other things. We serve plenty of other things that are not important. And we do plenty of other things that are wrong. It's not only the fault of our forefathers. Says the Rambam, it's an opportunity for us to think about some aspects of some of the mistakes that we make as well. Achigarim lahem vilanu osan hatzaras. What caused them to have pain and difficulty in their lives, and what causes us potentially? Now again, it's never anyone's place to say, well, the reason why somebody's suffering is because they did X, Y, or Z. The reason I was once at a levaya when a young child passed away, and they said, oh, the reason why is because nobody's keeping Shabbos carefully enough. Again, that's insane for a person to say that, and for a person to get into the head of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and decide why it is that things happen in the world. We can never really understand, but for myself, I need to make a cheshbon nefesh. I need to ask myself why things happen, and what is it in my life that I can improve, maybe in a small way, maybe in a big way. But something to think about on a day of public mourning. Shebezikaron hadvarim elu nashiv lehetiv. The only way that we will ever have an opportunity to change, says the Rambam, is if we think about such ideas. And it's a lofty goal for us to have to sit down. It's embarrassing for us to have to sit down and think about a mistake that we may have made. But it's an opportunity, says the Rambam. And the day of those opportunities are on the public fast days that we all commemorate together. So let's use this as an opportunity to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like the Navi Zechariah said, Yieh lebeis Yisrael l'sason u'l'simcha. We ask that we come to that time when Asarah B'Teves and Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av and Tzom Gedalia will all be days that will be marked on the Jewish calendar as days of sason u'l'simcha, days of great celebration. We will no longer have to have commemoration of Churban. We will have an opportunity to celebrate rebuilding, to celebrate Shivas Tzion. But until that time, it's an opportunity for us to think very carefully about Liftoach, Libenu, to open our hearts, to open our minds on days of public fasting, and to use those as opportunities to transform ourselves, to use them as opportunities to be mindful about our own lives, take stock of what we do right, of perhaps some of the things that we do wrong, and to just give ourselves an opportunity to think if there's a small way that we can change even a slight aspect of our own character. So I wish everyone a wonderful day, a meaningful fast, and I look forward to seeing everybody next week. Mirza Shem.